I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Not so much, actually, because
not everywhere.
Wow, we're going to get into that. Thomas Tuchel leaving Chelsea, being fired by Chelsea. Yeah. We'll cover that. We're going to cover Napoli's huge win over Liverpool. Incredible stuff, although maybe not a surprise given Liverpool's record in Naples. We'll have the whole Champions League. So much going on, but obviously we're going to start in Zagreb. Now, I was struck by something. I wrote about this. Thomas Tuchel, after the game, you know, he does those flash interviews with broadcasters. They ask them, are you worried about your job? And he says, well, it's not a worry, it's reality. And then he makes a face which looks just like, and I wrote this, just like Dennis Hopper in True Romance after Christopher Walken, you know, gives him kind of the kiss of death and he takes a dragon cigarette. I mean, powerful stuff, one of my favorite films. What, 14 hours later, Chelsea put out the announcement. 12 hours later, he's told that he is out of a job. And this is a firing. This is a sacking. This is not
mutual
like
consent.
Mutual consent, pretendo.
And even if he thought it could happen, I think he was shocked that it happened the way he did on Wednesday morning, really. I think, and that's why he asked the club to say, give me one more game. Let's wait until Fulham. I've got new players coming in. I need to blend them in. I need to integrate them. It's not easy. Look at all the changes we went through. And I think they made their mind even before the Zagreb defeat.
All right. Not as shocked as I am. I'm not shocked that he's gone because, look, we've said this every week, right? We come here and we talk about how bad Chelsea have been this season. And I didn't like Chelsea's recruitment either. However, you know, with the exception of the Spurs game, obviously.
Yeah.
However, there's a simple basic fact, and I'm not saying anything original. A lot of people have said it. How do you, in the summer, decide to go and spend 300 million odd in euros on players? Players chosen by Tuchel. All of them chosen by Tuchel.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you said Carney, Chukwuemeka is one for the future. Fine, right?
Yeah, the young
and so
is not keen.
You, with no experience doing it, you say, okay, fine, I'll back the managers if you're Sir Alex Ferguson. And then 7 days into the season, some of these guys didn't even play. Dennis Zakaria, 0 minutes. Wesley Fofana, 1 Premier League game. Alba, 45 minutes of Drek, by the way. Against Dinamo Zagreb. Or, sorry, 60 minutes.
No, but I get your point. I think maybe you...
This makes no sense.
No, but you could also say that those players would be good with any... Like Fofana, okay, he's a Tuchel choice. And maybe they would have gone for Gvardiol or maybe they would have gone for another centre-back with another manager. But you think that Fofana would be good with
you and
me as a manager as well. Okay. You don't buy it because he could be good under Tuchel and only Tuchel.
Right. Okay, obviously a good player is good under a good player, right? But and a player... It's like there's no good or bad players, right? It's all about pricing. I learned this from a friend of mine who works at a hedge fund, right? So
true.
Cucurella might be 60 million, 50 million, whatever they played for him for Tuchel, if Tuchel believes in him and whatever.
Yeah.
Some other dude's going to be like,
that's true.
For 60 million, I would have rather had or whatever, right?
No, you're right.
So
you're right.
This is why it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Every club in the world, even the richest club, has finite resources. And so to do this, I don't know. I don't know what Todd Boehly and his friend El Gabi or whatever his name is, who are running the show. I don't know what they're thinking. This is so counterintuitive. There's got to be something that we don't know.
And well, maybe just the fact as well, Gab, that they just didn't get on. They just could not work with each other anymore. And I think it gets to a point where if you...
And it took
them
3 months to realize this.
Well, no, but I think...
It took them 3 months and 300 million to realize that they don't get along with each other.
No, because a few weeks ago they talked about an extension. So at some point, things must have been better because I was told that they were beginning of talks about maybe extending his contract. I think it was a slow process in the sense that they didn't see eye to eye anymore. They didn't see the same direction. They were disappointed by the lack of style. I mean, they were not playing well. So
I get all that.
We were worried. We said it. We got abused by Chelsea fans. And now look where they are with no manager.
Completely. No, I get all that. You said no manager. By the time people listen to this, they may have a manager. Graham Potter has been praised to high heaven, and I think rightly so. I think the job he's done with Brighton has been tremendous.
Yeah.
I love the guy. I love the idea of a guy who, you know, middling player, tried to get into games. Well, he does have one England under-21 cap, I discovered from Wikipedia. But you know, can't get a look in England. What does he do? He says, I'm going to back myself. I'm going to go abroad. I'm going to go to Östersund in Sweden when they're in the lower divisions. I'm going to do all this crazy, innovative stuff. I'm going to prove myself a success from there to Swansea, to Brighton, doing it the hard way. All these ex-pros, oh, I'm not given a chance in the game, blah, blah, blah. Well, look, here's a guy who goes and takes his chance abroad, and now he's vindicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
That said, it is a leap. And also, at Brighton, Jules, he had Dan Ashworth, he had Tony Bloom, he's got a progressive, outward-looking club, he had a whole structure around him.
I think he's courageous to go for Potter ahead of a Pochettino, and we can talk about Poch in a little bit.
Oh, we will.
Because right now, everybody can say to me, like you did, he did a great job at Brighton, he did a great job at Östersund, he did a good job at Swansea. No one can tell me that this is going to work at Chelsea. This is going to work in one of the best clubs, biggest clubs in the world. I'm not sure that fluidity tactically, changing everything, tweaking all the time. So almost inventing new position for different players because he had an idea of, hey, what if we put this guy there and what about that guy, which I really admire. I think tactically he's got a great brain, but I think this is far easier to do at Brighton where there's no pressure on result apart from not going down than a club like Chelsea with players who are all international players.
But to be fair, That's always been the thing, right? Unless you're Pep Guardiola, there's a few people who start out near the top and have the pedigree as ex-pros and whatever. But you know, the world is full. Thomas Tuchel himself, right? And, you know, when he goes from Mainz to Borussia Dortmund, oh, I'm not sure. Can he handle the pressure of 80,000 people on the yellow wall and the stars at Mainz? And then from Mainz to Paris Saint-Germain, more stars. And then just, you know what I'm saying? Like Sarri, same thing, right? These guys who are self-made, at some point, that's always going to be question mark. You roll the dice. I think what helps tremendously in those situations, and this is why I talked about the structure before, is having people around you. The job of a director of football isn't just, at least the way I conceive it, like most clubs conceive it, isn't just to go and, like, you know, stand there when they sign the contract and negotiate the contracts and go and sign players. The job is also to be there, to be a support to the manager, to be a support. Yeah. You know, we talked at United how so much of that shambles was the fact that, you know, by every indication we've had from people in and around the club, like, you know, Darren Fletcher and Murta, they didn't have that visible role with the players in the squad media. So this is something that Potter had at Brighton. I mean, still has, because as of right now, he hasn't signed.
Yeah.
So I think that is something. But, I mean, for me, the absolute priority has got to be a director of football, a more football person who can be more present, and he can show that authority towards the players as well.
Yeah, which is a fair point. And we go back to, I think it was the discussion we had around Newcastle when they were looking for a new manager. You should appoint a sporting director that would be in line with who you choose as a manager. I think it's always a bit odd to do the manager first and then, okay, let's do the sporting director now. And you might get someone who might get a few candidates who are not too keen on Graham Potter as a manager, for example, if he's the guy that you go for. So I would have done sporting director first, but I would have done sporting director a very long time ago. And this is one of the things that Tuchel was not happy with. He was like, this is not how big club works. You don't have your owner suddenly becoming your sporting director. Right, well, nothing about football.
Let's talk about this. Let's remind people about why they were in this situation. Obviously, 6 months ago, Todd Boehly wasn't thinking about buying Chelsea. Then Vladimir Putin decided to conduct a special police operation, a.k.a. war, in Ukraine. Yeah. And then the sanctions came in and they forced sale. Because of the forced sale, what we saw in the summer was essentially everybody at Chelsea who had made the club a success, and I think a stable success, because people joke about, oh, Chelsea always chopping and changing manager. Chelsea actually had a lot more stability in-house because Marina Granovskaya had been there forever. Bruce Buck had been there forever. You know, you had the continuity of Peter Cech, before him Michael Emanalo, before him in a slightly different role, Mike Ford. You know, you had all these people who were actually there a long time and were really, really good. Scott McLaughlin, another one who maybe not many people know, but was so important in the recruitment, so much power. All of a sudden, all these people are gone.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I don't know who's, I'm sure somebody's advising Todd Boehly. I'm sure there's intermediaries. We know he met with Mendes. All of a sudden, you have that. Now, we know that in the summer, they tried to go for Michael Edwards, former Liverpool guru, whatever. great choice, tremendous choice, logical thing, something you expect Boehly to do.
Well, at least speak to him, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, he invests in companies, he's a private equity guy, like, who are the most talented guys? This guy, fine, perfect. Let's talk to him, right? It didn't work out. Maybe that's what caused the delay. Maybe that's why, give Boehly the benefit of the doubt.
One, he's not the only candidate, Gab, though. It's not just Michael Edwards or me, then.
Okay, so I will give Boehly the benefit of the doubt here, where, you know, you said, well, we want to get... I agree. I'm going to role play Boehly now. I'm going to say, look, Jules, I got you. I know what you're saying. Director of football, most important thing. I get it. I run a baseball team. My general manager is super important because he thinks long term, whereas coaches inevitably think short term, right? The problem is, because I also want to think long term, I want to get the right director of football and not just bring some schlub in you know, for a year, right?
No, that makes sense.
So we went for Michael Edwards, right? Best in class, arguably, along with usual candidates. We weren't able to do that. Somebody had to do the deals. Rather than bringing in somebody who, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, I did the deals myself. And I said, I'm going to go and I'm going to support my manager, you know, as best he can. Because Tuchel knows more about football than I do, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to give Boehly the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
So do we think this is what happened, right?
Yeah, this is what happened.
Okay.
We know that's what happened.
Where this whole thing falls for me, and what I would love to know, and Todd, you're welcome on the show whenever you like. I mean, we literally are half a mile from where you're staying. You spend all this money, and again, resources are not infinite.
Yeah.
And then you get rid of the guy. And this is what I struggle with. And then... I'm sorry. Maybe they were big Potter fans for a long time, although I don't know who put Potter on their radar, whatever. I mean, but for me, the other thing about Potter or any kind of change now is, you mentioned it before, Potter's never had European football, you know, to this scale, right?
Ostersund,
on top of that, we have this congested, super congested schedule.
Yeah.
Potter works on the training pitch. Potter, I always bring this up, right?
You're right.
And what time is he going to have?
None.
They have an international break at the end of September when all the players are going to be away anyway. Yeah. And then it's balls to the wall until the World Cup starts. And this is where your Champions League future is going to be decided. Possibly your Premier League standing. You know, it could be a big hill to climb. What I don't understand is, why not stick with Tuchel until the World Cup and see where you are? The advantage of that is you can better assess some of these guys who've come in. You can see where, you know, can Tuchel screw it up? Sure. You know, and obviously if you slip down into the relegation places or near the bottom, then you get rid of him earlier, right? Then you're forced to do it. But give it a little more time. For all the chaos and gnashing of teeth and tearing of hair and, you know, biblical plagues, Chelsea are... 6 points out of first place? 5 points out of first place? Something like that?
Yeah.
Right? They're sixth in the table. They're a couple points out of the Champions League. All right. So they lost to Dinamo Zagreb away. Okay, fine. It's not irretrievable at this point.
No.
That is the part, that is the mystery that I can't wrap my head around.
There's one point that you haven't mentioned, and it's the relationship between Thomas Tuchel and his own players. Because I think that relationship was very strained already. I mean, English people love this, oh, he lost the dressing room, blah, 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 which doesn't make anything. That doesn't really mean anything. However, that relationship was not great. Maybe not with everybody in that dressing room. There were still probably some guys, some players who still liked him, still were maybe closer to him than others. But that relationship as a whole wasn't great anymore. I think a lot of the players were disappointed by how the season ended last season, because he had issues, and we said that in his private life, that I think spelled onto the pitch. No, not spelled, but like...
They certainly impacted Chelsea's impacted running.
Yeah. And I remember the West Ham game where he literally sat down for over an hour on his bench, not moving, not saying anything, not telling anything to his own players who were struggling in a game that they were really, really poor. I think there was a lot of players, because... Man management and relationship, okay, he's okay at it, but this is not his forte. He's got a very special personality in many respects. And also the fact that he kept finding excuses that were never his fault. And I think a lot of players in the end got a bit fed up by the fact that he was either the referee or the pitch or the players or the fitness or this and that, but never his own tactical choices, where at times it was very hard to understand what he was trying to do on the pitch. And suddenly now, they've got no idea what to do with the ball.
What I would say there, and it's 100%, I mean, I have the opportunity to speak to a couple of Chelsea players as well and have done, and that's been the feedback. Certainly the feedback I got, and yours might be different, is that in terms of the leaders in the dressing room, you know, people like Thiago Silva, who is obviously still very important to him, you know,
yeah,
be up for another season. Jorginho, not necessarily super happy of being in and out, but, you know, he still had them on board. But they all, to a man, I think, I'm not putting words in their mouth, there certainly were elements there who were frustrated by playing time, frustrated by his decisions, and not really understanding where are we going with this. I mean, certainly, if I'm Ben Chilwell, for example,
yeah,
I don't understand, or if I'm another player, actually, I don't understand, wait, Chile was okay last year. You know, he's not ripping it up. But is this really where we needed to spend the money? $60 million on Cucurella? Is this really the guy with the hair? You know, Brighton Guendouzi?
No,
sorry, I'm being unkind. He's a better player. But
no, but yeah. Still a fair point.
And people could see how strained he was. But the thing is, if the players had, and we said, this goes back to the end of last season, if they could see it, surely Boli and Algabi could see it too. Surely they saw it too. Surely then what you do is you make a change in the summer. Or you say, hey, yeah, Tommy, work with what you have for now. Let's keep some of these $300 million aside and then see where we are. And then we do a rebuild. And we have the money there for the rebuild. And
there's certainly some players who thought that maybe Tuchel would not be there at the start of the season.
Well, no question there was. Yeah.
And I think his comments in preseason after the Arsenal defeat, that was a heavy defeat, remember, where he said, like, I'm worried, we're not ready. Where are we going? But again, not owning the situation. And I think if you Todd Boehly, you don't want a manager who always find excuses. And I think that, again, we go down to the relationship between Todd Boehly and Thomas Tuchel.
Todd Boehly. It sounds like you're saying Tom Brady to me.
Tom Brady, sorry. Todd Boehly. Boehly?
Boehly.
Boehly. Maybe at some point you say, like, you know what? This is not going to go anywhere. It's not going to get better. You and I are not going to like each other because we know it. We're too different. We see things differently. I want young players. You want to use that money to buy more experienced players. You want some players like Aubameyang that I don't want in my squad. I don't want to pay 30 or 14 million pounds plus Marcos Alonso for a 33-year-old.
Well, the Aubameyang deal is the pinnacle of this, right?
Yeah, I think this is the last straw.
I know, but you did it. You enabled him to do it. If I enable my child to go and eat ice cream on the sofa and then they spill it all over the place, then it's my fault.
I know, but the new manager would have needed a striker anyway.
He doesn't need a freaking Aubameyang and all that money for this guy?
But then,
seriously? Aubameyang?
No, but in the sense... No,
what manager wants this?
No, I hear you, but it's still better than no one. So I think he got to a point where he's like,
he's not better than no one, because no one in this case is Armando Broja, and I would rather have him than Aubameyang.
But Potter, whoever comes in, might play Broja and not Aubameyang at all and freeze him out, right? Maybe.
And then you spend all this money on somebody you don't need and who's unhappy and whatever.
But I think the line was thin in the sense like, okay, we need someone, whoever is on that bench, we need someone else, we need another body. I think we could all see that. Maybe not Aubameyang, but it was too late anyway. So it was him or no one, you pick him. But it shows again the tension and the strain between Boehly, Tuchel, the dressing room. I think there was a lot of players in that dressing room who said, really? Aubameyang? When you send Lukaku back, because you could not work with him, by the way. After, Lukaku going back.
Yeah, after you broke balls to sign him.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about this. I mean, people say, Lukaku was a club sign. Club signing from who? You think Roman Abramovich says, I really need to have the big fella back? No. This was you.
Yeah. So, and you know, so again, this is, I understand, I agree with you on the timing and maybe giving him more time. But let's remind everyone that the relationship was bad and the situation was bad for all those decisions that some made that a lot of people didn't agree with, and the other way around as well.
Two more points to make on this. One is, you mentioned Pochettino. Let's talk Pochettino. If I'm sitting there, are you disappointed?
I think he should be disappointed, because he's there on a free, being a proven top six Premier League manager already. So not like, yeah, we can say, okay, he was not good at PSG, and that kind of like put a little doubt over his ability to go to a club like Chelsea, maybe. But for Graham Potter, it's like, this is all new to him. Poch knows that stuff.
Okay, again, so I'm all about giving benefit of the doubt to Boehly. Are there two other factors which could have impacted this? Number one, this still matters to a portion of Chelsea fans, are the ones who actually go to the stadium, not the ones who are, what? You know. He's a former Spurs guy. He's a very Spurs guy. The Battle of Stamford Bridge and everything.
Okay, so Conte, AVB. No, but like, come on. It's not like if no managers have managed both.
No, no, but those guys went
Mourinho.
Those guys went in the opposite direction. They all went in the opposite. Well, I don't know. I'm wondering if that played into his head a little bit, right?
Maybe.
I remember years ago, many, many years ago, when I was a kid, George Graham was linked to Chelsea. And I remember like the whole stadium singing, "You can stick George Graham up your backside." Rightly so, yeah. In my opinion.
Well, but anyway. I'd love them to sing that at Poch.
So I'm wondering, the other thing with Poch is, Poch is a pretty forthright guy. So if I'm Boehly, and again, I'm in Boehly benefit of the doubt mode right now, I'm thinking, I want to build that structure with the director of football, general manager, my Michael Edwards type wet dream at the top.
Yeah.
Potter has worked in that system. Potter is compliant in that system. Potter's a collegial guy. He talks to people. Ashworth, what do you think? Okay, I'll trust you here, whatever. Pochettino, both at Paris Saint-Germain and certainly at Spurs, where, you know, they went through several directors of football while he was there.
Yeah.
Maybe isn't so much the kind of guy who says, guy comes in and says, "I'm the Poch here." You know,
Yeah.
You know, maybe that played into it too.
Maybe. But I think then if you go down the route of the top managers already, there will be also a lot like that. It's not just Poch. I think there's a lot like that. So
Ancelotti's not like that.
Maybe not Carlo, but he's the exception. But okay, you went down, you are going down the Potter way for that's part of your that's one of the reasons. Okay, let's see if it works. I'm happy for Potter. I want to see him. I'm actually really excited to see if all his methods, all his philosophy tactically can work in there with that dressing room, which not maybe there's not big egos like you have in Paris or at United, but it's not an easy dressing room and it won't be as easy as the one in Brighton for sure. And so I want to see it. I just feel like if you're Poch, you have to be disappointed.
Final point on this. Obviously, we've both been in this media game for a long time. And this is kind of something I'm telling listeners out there. Again, I like to lift the lid a little bit.
You do that. Work.
This always happens when there's a sacking, right?
Yeah.
You get the club want to get their point across. The club employ people to go to speak to journalists on what we call background, where they reveal stories of all the bad things, all the stupid things the manager did. And these are probably generally true. Maybe some are a bit exaggerated. That's why, like, you have it at United. United, in some ways, is the worst. Like, Rangnick goes, all the stupid things Rangnick, Solskjaer. Oh, all the bad things that were, you know, like Van Gaal and his email. And, Mourinho was a weirdo. But the same thing happens with Mourinho when he left Spurs, by the way. So you get all the reasons so that then people can write, like, it is understood, the inside story of this and that, you know. It all comes directly from somebody at the club who doesn't have the guts to be quoted on any of this. Because my take is also, you know what, if it's all true, then tell us. Now, Tuchel, on the other hand, well, not Tuchel so much probably, but his agent.
His people, yeah.
Presumably his people are doing the same thing. Because that story in Bild, which I thought was hilarious, about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Where, you know, as the story goes, Boehly goes, "Hey, what do you think, Cristiano Ronaldo?" And I can imagine Tuchel rolling his eyes. You remember Tuchel at like 6'5", towering over Boehly, who, I don't know if Boehly is as short as he looks, but, you know, he was a college wrestler, right? He's got that squat compact, and just rolling his eyes and saying just simply, "No," right? And then it's like, how come? And then rolling his eyes again and being like, do I really have to explain it to you? I mean, unless Boehly want to have a philosophical discussion, I kind of feel you don't need an explanation why Cristiano Ronaldo to Chelsea would have been a terrible idea in so many different ways, right?
But they didn't speak the same language anyway. That's also part of the problem. But I think the worst is that I think Boehly asked a few times through the summer about Cristiano. Hey, still no for Cristiano? No. What about Cristiano? No.
Well,
what about Cristiano? No. I mean, how many times? If it's not in July, it won't be in at the end of August either.
No. And this is the other thing. I can only assume he had George Mendes in his ear,
of course,
throughout the summer. And again, if you own a club and if you're the interim sporting director, as he put it, you got to talk to George Mendes. It's a fact of life.
Of course.
But equally, enough. Understand. Yeah. You should know, even if you can grow up with football, you should know why, you know, not because Cristiano's a bad player or a bad person, but why Cristiano at Chelsea with Tuchel at this time would have really been a very, very poor idea. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Joe, let's talk about actual football on the pitch. And I feel like we gave, and by the way, Dinamo Zagreb fans, I know a lot of you watch. Big shout out to you.
Yeah,
big shout out to
Orsic,
Bruno Pekovic, great pass.
Yeah.
All this stuff. I'm sorry we couldn't give you more love, but Tuchel kind of a bigger story. But, hopefully you'll get through.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about you again. But in the meantime, we got to talk about Liverpool.
Wow.
Now, I want to go out there. I believe Klopp's been to Naples 4 times and he has lost every single time.
That's right.
Equally, you can look at it the other way and say, on another occasion, he went there, lost, and then won the Champions League. So,
true.
You know.
Exactly.
You get, if you're superstitious, I think this is all irrelevant. It's all in the past. It's all, what is relevant is that Liverpool were terrible. Liverpool played far worse in this game than they did before. Napoli were exceptional. So both things can be true. That is the only way to explain the fact that Napoli should have been 5-0 up at halftime, if not more. Now, I'm just counting the sitter that they missed and the penalty that they missed, right?
Yeah,
they were 3-0
right.
up, would have been 5-0.
Kvaratskhelia with the sitter that was saved on the line by Van Dijk, let's put it that way. The penalty missed by Osimhen that maybe Zielinski should have taken, like the first one that he took. And just Napoli exploiting perfectly all the weaknesses that we see, all the issues that we see right now with Liverpool, the high line, that is left exposed by the lack of counter press and press overall and being aggressive in midfield. And then obviously how terrible Trent Alexander-Arnold and Joe Gomez are playing right now defensively this season. This was like per team level, the defending from them too.
We're going to dissect everything that went wrong for Liverpool, but I think I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to Napoli. Just to, for
of
people
course.
Who don't follow this, Napoli decided in the summer, all right, we're going to cut back massively on everything, right? Their wage bill is about, I think it's a little more than half of what it was a year ago, right? They lost their longtime captain, local hero, Insigne.
Yeah.
They lost Dries Mertens,
who was
probably
there?
The most popular player. We'll get to that later. You know, possibly the most popular player at the club since Diego Maradona. And they lost their defensive rock, Kalidou Koulibaly. Okay, you lose. People talk about leadership and big personalities. This is what you lost in the summer, okay? And to come back so strong, they're second in Serie A, 2 points behind Atalanta, and to go and play with such ease, such confidence, that is a huge credit to Luciano Spalletti. Remember Zielinski linked with a move away all summer? He was phenomenal, 2 goals, and of course that assist for Anguissa. Anguissa was phenomenal. Meret, another guy got so much criticism, so much stick. Kim, the
one
big man at the back, filling Koulibaly's massive shoes. This was special.
Yeah. I don't know if they can consistently play like this in the big games. I mean, and we saw them dropping point last season in at home especially, and we've seen it already this year. But when they're on it like this, and when on top of it, they face a team lethargic or like Liverpool that has no clue what to do with the ball or without the ball. It's fun for them to exploit that and destroy them.
So a lot of times I thought Liverpool, even when they weren't always playing, and they didn't always play well in sort of the golden era of the last couple of years, they had big players who did big player type things. Okay, one of them, Sadio Mane, is gone.
Yeah.
Luis Diaz, I thought was okay. He did his part, but he's not Sadio Mane yet.
No.
Right? Nunez, Firmino, for now, not really contributing. Mo Salah and Virgil van Dijk, I think, are the two guys who, in the past, you know, when you're not playing well, could elevate.
Yeah, yeah.
And they failed to do that. Why are they both down at the same time?
I don't know. I think part of the problem, and I think the way they built their success was by outrunning everyone as well, being more intense than everybody. And this is, I think I checked last night, this is the 6 or 7 game in a row this season where the opposition ran more than Liverpool, have more sprints than the Liverpool players, and have more sprints at high intensity than the Liverpool players. So everything that has made them good, it's not, well, not everything, sorry. One of the biggest thing that they built all their success on, this is at the heart of everything Klopp has done, is gone. Whether that's because the midfield is not good enough to do it mostly. I mean, why
and
is
obviously
James
they
Milner,
have injuries and stuff like that.
How come James Milner starts a game like this? I've got nothing against him. Great servant, great player, whatever you want.
If Milner doesn't start, then you have to play Firmino in midfield or Matip in midfield. You run out of bodies.
No, I know, okay, but at least, even in the build-up, I would rather have Firmino there than bloody James Milner, who can't progress the ball anyway, and has never been able to. But just to go back on your point, Gab, the thing about Salah and Van Dijk, they need that intensity and they need that, you know, to outrun. They need the team to be so good in terms of running more than the opposition, because then Van Dijk is not so exposed and the high line is not so exposed. And, you know, as good as he is or as good as he was before, there's a point that you can't always be running back towards your goal all the time. That there's a point where you can't be left 2v1. You can't be, and I think that also leads him to making mistakes that we haven't seen. I mean, I think the stats say like in 150 games before, never gave a penalty away. Now he's given 2 away in the last 7 games, Fulham and Napoli on Wednesday night.
And he could have been sent off with a different referee against Everton.
And I think for Salah, we go back to the counter press where Mane was so influential in. For Salah to be so efficient, the higher you recover the ball, the better it is for him. Yeah. If you don't recover those balls high up the pitch, then he loses a lot of his strength. And then he seems to play more as a playmaker now and wider than he's ever done before. So I'm not really sure what's the idea with him.
Maybe he's trying to take responsibility somehow by wanting the ball to feet more.
How would you explain how average they've been together so far this season?
So, I look, the fitness side. So I think there's several elements, right? I think there was such a balance to it. I mean, you've touched upon it before. When you press from the front efficiently, then the midfield becomes more efficient. They have an easier thing plugging. They're not always chasing. And then, by consequence, the defense doesn't get exposed the way they do. The fact that that's missing because there's a lack of chemistry, because, you know, Nunez just arrived and then he's in and he's out and he gets suspended and whatever. Firmino can't get around the way he used to. All these things, and Mane's not there.
Yeah.
All these things, obviously, I think have an impact up front. But one thing I want to point out, though, is even when Liverpool were dominant, this thing with Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold being exposed, they've always been exposed. They've always been caught up high at the pitch. The difference is that in the past, the number of times that they managed to recover because of their athleticism, because of their reading, because of the angles they took, of all the things that make them a great. Those are two tremendous recovery defenders. But, you know, obviously, if you get exposed 10 times a game, it's difficult to recover 10 times.
Yeah.
I think that's the main difference. But that element of risk is always there. Now, Klopp said Liverpool need to reinvent themselves.
What does that even mean? Why? You change the formation. You play 3 at the back. You play 4-2-3-1. You're like, you can't do that now.
I am genuinely wondering whether at this stage, where they are, given how short they are in central midfielders. And by the way, I don't want to jinx anything, right? What happens if Fabinho gets hurt?
Well, that would be...
Could you look? Matip has played... Mata has played in a midfield, in a back three in the past. I don't think Firmino has, but obviously he's played right back. He's intelligent.
Yeah, you can play centre back.
You could slot him in there. He can play centre back as well. I'm just wondering, purely hypothetically there, might he be mulling over a back three with say, Fabinho, Van Dijk, and whatever, Konate, or whoever you want to put.
Yeah, Matip, Van Dijk, Konate, and then you leave Fabinho in midfield.
And then you leave Robertson and Trent free in that sense. And then, you can either leave Fabinho in midfield as an extra shield. I mean, it's a different kind of pressing, but you do have that cover. And then you can play Darwin through the middle or whatever. You can range a front three any way you like. You can put Firmino behind, sort of in a 10 position and Salah in the as wide, play Salah, or whatever. There's a lot of solutions, right, at that point. The difficulty for him is, how do you make that adjustment on the slide when there's so many fixtures?
Again, you don't have time to work on a training run or anything like that. I think Trent maybe needs a rest. Because, you can be caught, you can have a wrong positioning. There's a lot of things you can, as a defender, that you can do, but not putting the effort, not running. I mean, the Anguissa goal, he's literally there, he's standing up, looking at the ball, not even moving. It's not even like he's jogging, nothing. There's nothing. But how can, at that level, and as good as he is, how can you not give more of yourself, thinking like, okay, I need to recover, I need to cover, I don't know, anything. He's like a passenger.
Who is Liverpool's reserve right back?
A young Calvin Ramsey, who arrived in the summer.
I was going to say James Milner.
Or James Milner.
No, you don't want him in the lineup.
Well, yeah, I don't even know. Like,
it's tough. And, I think now is when he's got to do a psychological job as well. Harvey Elliott had a poor game. He's very, very young.
Yeah.
So you want to nurture him.
For him.
I'm just saying, from a man management perspective, how do you talk to Harvey Elliott and say, kid, you're still a kid. You had an absolute stinker. I'm not going to lie to you. You were terrible. As were most of your teammates.
Yeah, yeah.
But I believe in you. Keep going. How does he find it in himself? Again, I don't know the kid. Maybe he's got one of those iron personalities. But this is where, as a manager, I think you really earn your chops. It's with those players who can contribute who had bad games. And obviously the same applies to Trent as well. Van Dijk, obviously, you speak to differently. Van Dijk's had poor periods of his career before. Yeah. Hopefully he knows how to deal with it. And Salah, of course, as well.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
All right, enough Liverpool. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Juventus 2-1. Jules, that Mbappe kid is a bit special.
Wow, what a first goal. Incredible. I learned a new word. How do you say... So the assist from Neymar, that ball, that little dink, is called a louche in French, because you put your foot under the ball and you lift it.
Yes.
Like this. Like, like
a cucchiaio, a spoon in Italian.
Not really a spoon. It's more what the spoon that you serve soup with.
Oh, you're even more specific.
Yeah, what is it in English?
A soup spoon.
Ladle or what, something like that. Yeah, whatever, something like that. Well done to PSG. They fell asleep a bit at the start of the second half and allowed Juve to come back a bit and got a little scare. But they were really good for most of the game. So well done to them.
I'm surprised Allegri changed it up. Back three, front two.
I thought it was not a bad idea to start with.
And they weren't terrible relative to the recent outings.
True. But still, I think in terms of intentions, it could be much better. And Gab, four Juventus fans were stopped by police for making racist gestures at the Parc des Princes, and UEFA have opened an investigation.
Yeah, so obviously it's always good when people open an investigation. It's interesting because there's, I think, what UEFA do is they have deals with different anti-racism organizations. They have observers there who, you know, sit in the stands and collect information and like record stuff themselves. Most leagues have this. In this case, I watched some of these videos, right? These guys are complete idiots. I mean, leaving aside that what they're doing is despicable, right? They're racially abusing other fans, making monkey gestures and stuff like that, and Nazi salutes. Dude, you're standing in front of a bunch of people who are all carrying cell phones like this one. You're going to get busted. I want these guys named. And I hope you say these guys aren't coming back to the stadium for a long, long time, if at all.
Yeah.
Real Madrid win 3-0 away at Celtic. Oh, look, Celtic jersey. How about
tribute
that?
To the incredible atmosphere.
To our boy Ange.
It was crazy.
But do we need to hold our breath regarding Karim Benzema?
I'm being told it's not too serious, Gab. Matter of 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, just to not take any risk. It's a muscular injury, but the knee could have been hurt. It's not hurt, the meniscus in the end. It's a bit of a scare. Let's not forget that he's getting older and he's played a lot last season. So, you know, I think they need to manage him a little bit cautiously, let's put it that way.
Good thing Ancelotti has that long list of Benzema replacements. Mariano Diaz, talented. Hazard, exactly. Marco Asensio, Rodrigo.
All of that. Bayern bounced back from consecutive draws in the Bundesliga by winning 2-0 away at Inter. Normal service resumes, Gab, with an added Leroy Sané's magic.
Oh, he was in
that touch on the first goal.
Sané's good. He is basically unplayable. Doesn't happen all the time. I mean, if Nagelsmann ever harnesses his powers, the guy's going to be scary. Inter, to their credit, they tried to be. I thought they were pretty bold.
They were
playing Mkhitaryan. You know, dropping Barella, a big call. Playing Mkhitaryan in midfield. But really, apart from that, first 15, 20 minutes at the start of the second half, after, you know, when they were a goal down, it looked like maybe they could get back into it.
Yeah.
But no, not enough for Simone Inzaghi. No shame, I think, in losing this one.
No.
Just the two goals for Erling Haaland as Manchester City trounced Sevilla 4-0, Jules. He's slowing down.
Yes, a bit slowing down. We were expecting the hat-trick. He's still 25 goals in 20 appearances in the Champions League, which is sick.
Did you love this parallel between Haaland and Mbappe consecutive days? It's a little kind of goat, potential goat audition.
I know. I think they're going to push each other even more, and they're going to like sort of motivate each other. And who knows, maybe one day they will play with each other. And that would be pretty cool to see as well. But in the meantime, I mean, Sevilla were dreadful. I'm not really sure what Lopetegui tried to do with his back five and playing Papu and Isco as their forward. But anyway,
hanging by a thread at this stage.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't be surprised if he was sacked very soon. Robert Lewandowski gets his first hat-trick for Barcelona as they beat up Victoria Plzeň 5-1. Third hat-trick with the third different team in the Champions League, by the way. Incredible as well.
So Victoria Plzeň, not very good. But Barcelona put on a clinic. And I thought it was nice, Frank Kessié getting his first goal. I want Barcelona fans to appreciate how different he is from the others. And he can bring you so much this season if you use him correctly. I love the old school Sergio Roberto, Jordi Alba fullback partnership. I don't know how often we're going to see that again, but it was nice to see. I love Lewandowski. He's just such an all-rounder. Right? We always knew he's incredibly technically gifted, but I feel that, you know, you must have loved the little back heel.
Of course.
I kind of feel that he's maybe in this environment, Barcelona, he's even more free to be an all-rounder rather than just, you know, a center forward who scores 50 goals in a season.
Completely.
Tottenham Hotspur beat Marseille 2-0 with two late Richarlison headers. Jules, it was very tough going until Chancellor Mbemba got sent off. In fact, even after that, it was tough going.
Yeah, very average performance from Spurs. Marseille played really well and were maybe even the better side in the first half. They didn't do much with the ball, but still the way they controlled the game and the tempo of it was great. And then that red card, as you said, on 47th minute, just changed the whole dynamic. After that, they were a bit more under pressure, but still defended well until that cross from Perisic that should not have been allowed to cross even on his right foot. And then no marking on Richarlison. And after the first goal, then it was inevitable that
first shot on goal, Hugo Lloris made a save in like in injury time in the first half.
I know, crazy. But still, if it felt like, okay, it's another defeat for Marseille and they lose a lot in the Champions League. But it could have been maybe a little bit better on a better day without the red card. Salzburg and Milan battled to a 1-1 draw, Gab. Were you expecting a little bit more from Pioli's crew in that game?
I'm not sure. Not after the derby. Salzburg are a pain in the backside to play
so
against. They're so intense. I thought they hung in there. They had the chance to win it at the end, which might have been slightly unkind to Milan. But I think when you go through this, you budget for a draw away to Salzburg. Now, of course, they got to go and beat them at home. Shakhtar Donetsk with one of the feel-good stories of this Champions League round, winning 4-1 away at Leipzig.
Yeah, incredible performance overall. I mean, it was poor from Leipzig, which would cost his place to Tedesco. That's the next question. But credit to Shakhtar, considering the context, the situation.
Yeah, it's not just the war,
the lack of preparation.
The fact that they're, you know, it's Shakhtar Donetsk, but they're not actually playing Donetsk. Yeah. It's the fact that they lost, what, like 10 players? Maybe
all the Brazilians,
in the
pretty
summer?
Much, yeah, have all gone.
You have one of your favorite players there, yeah?
Yeah, Mikhailo Merdik, the young 21-year-old winger that they have from the academy who was amazing in that game. He was linked with a few English clubs towards the end of the transfer window. So remember the name Merdik because that was pretty special.
Is it Merdik or Mudrik?
What did I say? Murdick? I said no. Mudrik. No relationship with Modric, but yeah, very, very special player as well. Bayern aside, not a good week for German managers and German clubs and guys whose name means German in Italian. Domenico Tedesco is at Leipzig and Marco Rose has now been appointed to replace him.
Yeah, obviously the defeat to Eintracht, I think, you know, obviously they always come out and say this, oh no, we decided before the game, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
They're just leaking way too many goals. Defensively, it's a mess. And it's funny because, you know, people said, oh, Tedesco's, you know, too defensive for Leipzig. Well, this evidence, given the number of goals that they've been shipping. Yeah. Marco Rose had an absolute nightmare in Dortmund. I saw at Gladbach, he really showed that he's a real coach. He's got the company DNA, shall we say. He needs to turn it around, I think, quickly. He's got the talent there. He's got the tools there to do it. Wild ending in the Atletico Madrid-Porto game, Jules, but it turns into a good night all around for the Simeone family.
Yes, that's right, Gab. Giovanni scored for Napoli, of course, and then kissed the Champions League ball that he's got tattooed on his arm that he did when he was 13 as a dream to one day play.
13? How old were you when you got your first tattoo?
Not 13. I don't think my dad would have been happy. I don't think El Cholo himself was happy with Joe doing that.
I got mine at 16, but it was in a place where my dad didn't normally look.
But then good night for Atletico as well, although it didn't look that way until the 91st minute. Hermoso scored the first goal of all people. We thought, okay, this is it, they've won it. But then Hermoso himself gives away a penalty for like a stupid reflex.
Penalty which Oblak nearly saves.
Yeah, on Uribe. And then in the last kick of the game, Antoine Griezmann, the savior who came on the hour, we know why, with the last kick of the game. Well done to Atletico.
Mr. 60 minutes.
Yeah, Mr. 60 minutes.
Or maybe Mr. 30 minutes or under 30 minutes.
A goalkeeping howler and tight semi-automatic offside decision give Bruges a win over Bayer Leverkusen. Our boy Rico Suave, Gab, has lost 6 of his first 7 games now.
Yeah, I want to talk about the offside first on Schick. We have semi-automatic offsides. It's a reason. People say, oh, this isn't what VAR was invented for. No, I want clean decisions. That's fine. I got no problem with it. Tough going for our boy Gerardo. Because this was a season when, you know, they hung on to Schick and Diaby. Yeah. They added Callum Hudson-Odoi. A lot of people had them going as a third force in the Bundesliga, maybe even the second force. Didn't work out that way, but shout out to Bruges because you were down on them when we did our Champions League preview.
I wasn't.
And they still have Hans van Aken, Mr. Champions League.
Of course.
Ajax destroying Rangers 4-0. Jules, there's evidently life after losing so many players. Yeah. But guess what? I think I'm going to list them in song. There's Haller and Gravenberch, Martinez and Mazraoui, Peer Schurz, Onana, Tagliafico, and of course, Antony. That's all right. Yeah. No, periodic table.
I've heard you doing better than
all right,
that.
All right, I'll work. This is extemporaneous.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, all these guys leave, and they be Rangers.
Okay, Rangers are not very good. Let's be honest here. And they gifted them some goal, like the fourth one that Bergwijn scores. But Mohamed Kudus, fantastic. I mean, just collectively, this Ajax
Kudus
team was
tried
great.
To leave too.
Wow. I mean, just Tavernier is still wondering how. how to defend on him. So pretty impressive from Ajax. They will be better opponents, of course, and starting with next week. But this was a very good start for sure. A goal and an assist for Marcus Edwards, who leads Sporting to a huge 3-0 win away at Frankfurt.
Yes, the Enfield Messi, as he was once known.
One of the kids.
He grew up in your backyard.
Yeah,
did you see him as a kid? Did you ever kick the ball around with him?
But I knew of him, of course, and especially when he was at the Spurs Academy.
I love this story because obviously Ruben Amorim, I think, is a very good coach. But, you know, an Eintracht buzzing coming off the big win at the weekend against Leipzig. But I love the fact, again, same thing applies to Potter, right? You don't get a chance in England as a young player. What do? You can either sit on the bench, collect your money, go mope in the championship somewhere, or, hey, look, I'm going to go abroad. I'm going to learn something new. And you know what? When he went abroad, he didn't go to Sporting. He went to, I think it was Vitória Guimarães, right?
That's right.
I'm going to prove myself here. He's done that. He got the big move in the summer for him, and I'm happy he's doing it on the big stage.
Yeah, me too.
Borussia Dortmund beat Copenhagen 3-0. Jules, after a dicey start this season, Edin Terzic is getting it right, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Copenhagen again. Not very good. Certainly not good enough for Dortmund, who were relentless, especially in the first half, in their movement, the way they recovered the ball, the counter-press. All that worked really well. We had a great Jude Bellingham. Joe Reyna coming on for Thorgan Hazard, who got injured early on with two assists. Well,
nice to see Reyna play more than 45 minutes.
Yeah, without getting injured.
I think it's like his third appearance this season. He's easing back in.
Exactly. Really good. And they look good. But again, a bit like Ajax, they will have tougher opponents later on in the competition. This was back on Monday night in Serie A. But Gab, we need to show some love. Atalanta, top of Serie A.
And this is relevant because, for two reasons, essentially. One is Atalanta kind of went off the boil at the end of the last season. It was obvious to everybody. They kind of, you know, they slowed down. There were doubts about whether Gasperini was going to stay. They brought in new players. They're doing it differently this year. They're doing it by not conceding many goals. Coop Miners has been an absolute revelation.
Yes.
They don't play at a million miles an hour. Or rather, they do sometimes. Sometimes they don't. And it's fantastic. Now, they haven't really played anybody good except for Milan, and they drew with Milan.
Yeah.
It was Monza they beat on Monday night. So let's wait for the test, but it's nice to see them near the top. Two goals early in the second half propelled Benfica past Maccabi Haifa. But Jules, you love your Tekker, so I know that all you're going to want to talk about is that Alex Grimaldo goal. How do you put that kind of weird spin on it? Like, what?
I don't know. He hit it with his laces and it went top corner. Top. You can't do more top corner, but you're right. The ball sort of floating a bit and comes down. We said often, and sometimes we'll be mean with him. Well, we're not mean, but we said if he was good, he would have left a long time ago. However,
really, I thought Benfica always hung on to their best players.
However, don't be mean. However, this was a very special goal. He gave the cross for Rafa Silva for the first goal as well. So overall, a very good night for Grimaldi and for Benfica.
Grimaldo, Alex, if you're watching, turn this into an NFT.
That's a good idea. Ben Leno moved to Fulham from Arsenal over the summer, and he had a few things to say, Gab, like the fact that losing his starting spot to Aaron Ramsdale was about politics, not performance. Gab, any idea what he's talking about?
No, so I'm going to go and put words into his mouth, as we in the media like to do. But if you're about politics, not performance, I can assume that what he means is Arteta liked Ramsdale more. Arteta maybe the club wanted a younger goalkeeper.
Yeah, maybe an Englishman.
This is going to be a theme in the next question, too. I think all these things coming together. I also personally don't think that Leno was that good. And I think Ramsdale's been exceptional. When he says not performance, I'm like, yeah, maybe in your head. To me, Ramsdale is a much better goalkeeper, and he's shown it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the Smucker's Uncrustables Radio Hour with round, soft, pillowy bread filled with delicious PB&J. Here's your host, Uncrustables.
Caller on line 3. What's eating you?
No one.
Crust, is that you?
Ugh.
Uncrustables are the best part of the sandwich. Sorry, crust.
More moaning from departed players. Eric Bailly, now at Marseille, says United prioritized English players. It's not clear to me if he's talking about Solskjaer or Rangnick or Ten Hag.
Yeah.
If it's Ten Hag, I might point out that it's probably news to Varane and Lisandro Martinez that they're English.
True, but even if we don't know what manager was referring to, we know what player. Because I think this is all on the hate.
Phil Jones! No, sorry.
And Harry Maguire, of course. But you're not happy. maybe he has a point, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. I don't know if he really was that good at training to make a case that he should have been playing and should have been starting for United. When he did play, he was not that amazing either. But yeah, maybe he could have had a bit more of a run of a game at times.
I mean, the thing which gets me about these comments is he was signed 4 managers ago, right?
Yeah.
He was signed by Mourinho.
And neither of them has played him. So
yeah. None of those managers are English, by the way. Solskjaer, Norwegian, yeah. Semi-English, whatever. But the other one's definitely not.
Yeah.
And he's been injured. He's been injured for so much of this long spell, and they gave him a new contract. I mean, at some point, if Bayi was better, I can't imagine Solskjaer, when he's being pelted, or Rangnick, when people are saying what a fool he is, says, oh, wait, no, let me stick with Maguire because he's English, even though I think Bayi is better. No, I think they just made their decisions, yep. Right or wrong.
I'm with you. Juventus looks set to announce losses of 250 million in 21-22 season after losing 210 million the year before. Gab, how concerned should supporters be?
By the way, Jules, that's 250 million in 2021-22, when, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo and his 65 million euro gross paycheck plus the 25 million amortization,
yeah.
Not on the books.
That's bad.
It is bad. So there's two ways about it. Part of the reason the losses actually rose, when obviously 21-22 was less pandemic impacted than the year before, has to do with the fact that a bunch of players took pay cuts or deferred wages.
Yeah.
So the wage bill actually rose when it kind of went back to normality in 21-22. So that was kind of physiological. We knew it was going to be a lot. They shouldn't be concerned in the sense that the cash is there. The Exor, the company that controls it, that it's run by the Agnelli family company, you know, they put in the 400 million before. They had budgeted for this. It is a worry. I hope they treat it as a wake-up call about how they spend their money, especially those big contracts for older players. You know, Di Maria, he got a short-term contract. I can live with that. You know, they have started, or at least at club level,
yeah.
You know, Arrivabene, since he's been there, has said we need to prioritize being a little more rational with this. You know, no more of this Aaron Ramsey, Sami Khedira. Yeah. Well, Sami Khedira was okay, but Aaron Ramsey, Emre Can, Rabiot. We didn't discuss how bad Rabiot was against his former club. So look, they can work their way out of it. They will work their way out of it, but it's going to take a while. Sticking with Juve, Paul Pogba has decided to have surgery after all. Jules, do you think Juve fans will see him before the new year?
No, I don't. I don't, Gavin. Max Allegri has said already, well, we'll have him back in January, which it doesn't mean that he will miss the World Cup. But it means, like, if he gets fit, surgery went well. It was on Monday night. But the World Cup starts now in 68 days or something like that, 69 days.
They're talking 2 months, so he's going to have just enough time to recover and start training.
Recover and pretty much start training and then go with France and then see if that's even possible. And then play at the World Cup without having played, I think, any minute at club level this season, which would be crazy. I don't know what Deschamps will do. This is a nightmare because, remember, he chose not to have the surgery back in August when he could have had the surgery back then and would be ready now to come back.
He thought he could manage it, which I think
without the surgery, which was, we said at the time, was very, very risky.
It was risky, but he did it for, I mean, I don't have a problem with his choices here because he's saying, I want to be loyal to Juve. I want to be able to contribute. So I'm going to take this risk that I can be fit and I can play between now and the World Cup. Once he saw that it was going to be difficult, he said, well, I'm going to have this injury, prioritize the World Cup and be back, you know, hopefully 100% second half of the season.
Sinisa Mihajlovic has been sacked as coach of Bologna after a poor start. Gab, there's a lot of sympathy for him, of course, given that he's living with cancer.
Yeah, I diagnosed 3.5 years ago. Now look, and it's been incredibly touching because obviously he looks different, he lives with pain, but he goes out there and he does his job. Now, this does not mean that you get to keep your job in perpetuity you're ill. However, it's been 5 games. Yeah, they didn't have the best start, but let's not forget they sold Bologna. He accepted, first of all, Bologna going from a team that was, you know, trying to compete, maybe outside shot Europa League to basically going with kids.
Yeah.
And they sold so many of his best kids in the summer, and they had a bumpy start to the season. if you wanted to part ways with Mihailovic because you think he's outdated or whatever, I mean, the rumors Thiago Motta's coming in, obviously. Yeah. Much more attacking football. Do it in the summer. I think this is pretty humiliating to do it now in these conditions. And I think, frankly, he deserved better. Jules, you're wearing a replica shirt. How much did you love seeing Joey Barton among the Marseille fans and, of course, Dries Mertens, not just among the Napoli fans, but wearing that 1980s Diego Maradona jersey?
Amazing. Let me start with Ciro Mertens. Amazing to see him there with his wife. He obviously still has his house in Naples. And being there as a fan, seeing how much he means to the club and to the fans and how much the club and the fans mean to him. That was pretty special. Joey Barton also with the away fans at the Tottenham Stadium with the Marseille fans. A video emerged on social media of him sort of insulting PSG and Parisians overall and repeating what the Marseille fans were telling him in French. Maybe not the most classy, but he wanted to go and support his old club. So I can kind of live with it.
Pardon my ignorance of the lower leagues. He's still managing Fleetwood, yes?
Fleetwood or maybe another League One club. Yeah, there was Fleetwood. It might be somewhere else now.
I know, it was just funny because it was Fleetwood. If it was Fleetwood, I think it takes about as long to get from Fleetwood to North London as it does to get from Istanbul, where Mertens now lives, to
Naples. Yes. Miralem Pjanic is moving to the United Arab Emirates. They're celebrating at the Camp Nou, aren't they, Gab? Great news.
This is a tremendous deal. That is a lot of wages coming off the books.
Yes.
So you don't need a lever for that, but every little bit helps. It puts them in a stronger position. And, you know, I think also takes some of the pressure off some of those other contracts that they were still trying to renegotiate. I think it helps. As for Pjanic, I don't know what went wrong. Obviously, it's weird. You know, Pjanic and Arthur, they both started declining at the same time. They've kind of had this weird, like, joined at the hip thing. But I do remember Pjanic when he was good, and I remember him being interviewed, and he's a bright young man. And, you know, if he can relaunch himself, at least have fun playing, and maybe, he's 32, he's not going to relaunch his career, but have fun playing, get some enjoyment out of football.
He's there for the money, come on. Not to enjoy his football.
It's the same money he's getting before. Well, though he's got more years, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It's a longer contract.
Mauro Icardi has a new club.
Yes!
And Juan Mata is on his way to join him.
True.
Jules, I was just going to ask this about Icardi, and then I looked up who's at Galatasaray.
I did the same, actually.
This is pretty awesome. Like, this is honestly, you want to do like a retro run back in time, 5 years? We have... in addition to Mauro Icardi and Juan Mata, we have Muslera, we have Patrick Van Aanholt, Sofiane Feghouli. Remember you thought he was going to be the next big thing? Lucas Torreira, Dries Mertens, of course, Haris Seferovic, Sergio Oliveira. By the way, it was only last year that we thought Sergio Oliveira was really good.
Right.
And my personal favorite.
Of course.
And I genuinely thought this guy had retired.
He came back last January, I think.
Bafé Gomis. Remember he used to do that crazy...
Tiger,
like,
yeah, the Tiger celebration.
You know, he scored 3 goals this season. The things you discover.
The guy's amazing.
He's 37 years old.
The guy's amazing. You know, when you play those charity matches that are sometimes on television in England, this is like, who do we have today? Oh, yeah, all those players. I mean, it's great. I can see the appeal of going to Turkey in a way towards the end of the career if you've got nothing else. You still think that some of those players could do a decent job in a better league, better club. No offense to Turkey and obviously the Super League and Galatasaray or Fenerbahce or Beşiktaş, whatever. But I find that
but
funny. Because they're not all old. You know, Lucas Torreira is not an old player. I know we put like, you know, an oldies station. It's not all the case. They're not
there was a point when we all thought, oh my God, these guys are going to be really, really good.
Exactly.
Some of them have been really good. Like Mata, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
And Ciro Mertens. But the thing about Turkey, and I mean, I spent a few days there, obviously around the Champions League draw, is that you're going to a team, Galatasaray, which they have, 10 million fans, 50 million fans.
Yeah, crazy.
You're playing in packed stadiums. It's a huge country. You're playing in a very competitive league where the tension, I mean, maybe these teams, you know, aren't great like the Galatasaray
teams of
yesteryear, but it doesn't matter. You get that competition, you get to play, you have incredibly passionate fans. Good for
them. Istanbul is a great, apart from the traffic, it's an amazing city as well to live in. Yeah.
And by the way, I was speaking to my friend who's he's one of Pirlo's assistants. He said apparently, like, I think this year, I think they have 19 teams in the league because they're cutting down from 20. And I think, like he says, like we only have like six away trips all year because there's so many teams from Istanbul.
Serge Aurier is back, Gab. He becomes Nottingham Forest 22nd signing of the summer.
Yeah, I'll let you tell me about Serge Aurier and what he has left in the tank. The man who I remember years ago, our buddy Tor Christian Carlson, we sat down with one of those like players to watch and stuff when he was very young. And he says like, yeah, Serge Aurier, you know, he could be the Ivorian Dani Alves. Yeah. Didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, but Paris born and bred, so I can only love him. You know that.
I'm assuming he's on his way to Galatasaray next after Forest.
Yeah, of course, after Forest.
I'm intrigued by this 22 signings thing, okay? Because obviously you need to reinforce the squad. They brought in some guys who are very good, some other guys who look like a roll of the dice. Serge Aurier, I'm guessing, you know, not a big risk, out of contract. If he works out, he contributes. I'm just interested, how does Steve Cooper manage all these new guys? You know, we talk about chemistry being important and whatever.
I don't think you can.
And I'm slightly surprised too because, you know, Nottingham Forest owner is Evangelos Marinakis. He's a guy who's got years and years of experience in football. Obviously involved with Olympiacos. So I don't fully understand the strategy here.
Me neither.
May it work out.
Yeah, but, if they stay up, if they go down.
But it's funny because Steve Cooper really looks stressed at the best of times.
Like, but you know, Aurier,
learning the names.
I think Aurier would bring some experience as well, which is good, like a Kouyaté, for example, similar kind of thing. He didn't play much for Villarreal last season. But I think he can help. But and by the way, he was not born in Paris. He grew up in Paris, in Sevran. But 22, it's not just the 22 new players. It's also on top of they had a lot of players on loan last season who went back to the parent club. But still, this is a huge squad. What can you do at training with like 30, 32, God knows how many players that they have? At training, if you're Steve Cooper, like, it's crazy.
There's also a limit on the number of players you can have in the squad anyway. It's 20%.
Crazy.
But we'll see how it goes. We have a new world transfer record, Jules, in the women's game. Kira Walsh joining Barcelona from Manchester City for a reported 400,000 euros. I guess the levers apply across the club, Jules.
Yeah, maybe for 400,000. They have enough in the account, in the bank. I don't know if La Liga for the women's game also has some sort of, you know, wage bill cap and stuff like that.
I doubt it.
But I just love Kira Walsh. I think she's the best player in the world for me. She was amazing at the Euros, and this is an amazing move, really. Yeah. She joined the best club, even if Lyon beat Barca in the final of the Champions League. They're still the best women's team in the world right now, and it's going to be a hell of an experience for her. And I'm glad that she's going abroad and has that take on that challenge and will test herself in another league, in another country. It's a fantastic signing and news.
Can we give a mini shout out to John Laporte as well, in the sense that his job, we know, will rest on how the men's team does. When we can, I know basketball's super important there and whatever, women's team, but ultimately his whole lever experiment or stroke gamble will determine, you know, whether that's a success or not will be determined by how the men's team does. But those resources are in, and at least based on this, you get the impression he's spreading them across the club, across the different sports and the different disciplines, including women's football. Yeah.
Carlos Queiroz is back with Iran. He replaces Dragan Skocic, Gab, the guy who got them to the World Cup. Do you feel a bit sorry for him, and you happy for Carlos?
Well, I definitely feel sorry for him because they didn't just qualify. They qualified really, really well. I mean, they dominated. I think with like 2.5 goals a game and everything. And look, Asia, they're not pushovers, you know. There's always been talk. I don't know who's right, who's wrong about disputes, the federation. It's very political, money, blah, blah, blah. Queiroz coming back, as I heard from people in Iran, was like, oh, yeah, you know, now that they're at the World Cup, you know, they want Queiroz back, like certain people did. And
he did well in 2018. They did well.
He certainly did well, and he's a good coach.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit...
not great.
I feel bad for Skocic. You know, maybe somebody needs a coach. Maybe they might want to have a talk with him.
Yeah.
Right, Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday
because
we have a full slate of games across the European leagues. We got to see how Chelsea respond.
That's true.
And we got to see if Cristiano starts a game too.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.